Welcome to Open Comments with myself, Ash.
And me, Oliver.
Where we'll discuss things openly with our guests from a variety of backgrounds and from different walks of life. Through this podcast, we hope to give you an inside look into a variety of topics with an equal mix of humour and candour. In this series, we'll touch on some of the following topics: healthcare, HR, diversity, access to technology, and lots more. We hope you enjoy our show and look forward to bringing more topics into the fold. Let's get started.
Okay, so with us for our first ever episode is Dr. Chris Harding. And Dr. Chris Harding is a founder and principal of Lakibus Ltd. He formed the company to provide services based on virtual data lakes and data-centered architecture. Chris was actually a former staff member of the Open Group for many years, supporting its members' activities in data communications, directory interoperability, the web service-oriented architecture, cloud computing, and other areas. He was a lead author of the Open Group Guide, Cloud Computing for Business, and has helped produce a number of other Open Group publications. So, Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Oliver. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming on to our podcast, Chris. So to start with, would you mind telling us a bit more about what you do and how long you've been doing what you do as well, please? Thank you.
So that's an interesting question, Ash. Basically, I'm the head cook and bottle washer for the company. So I do all of it. I have to say, at the moment, my time is mostly occupied with development activities rather than sales or marketing. And that's because I need to get something ready to sell and market before getting deeply into those activities. But I'm expecting to make the transition over the coming months, in fact.
Okay. And what led you to form Lakibus? Obviously, we touched on it briefly that you used to work for the Open Group, but what led to this new business venture for you?
So it came partly out of my experience at the Open Group. I found that the position I had at the Open Group was exposing me to ideas in the industry. There are a lot of members in the Open Group who work in major companies and who bring some of the thoughts and things that are circulating in those companies. And in my latter time at the Open Group, I was forum director for something called Open Platform 3.0. And we spent quite a lot of time investigating the requirements for a third platform for information technology based on the web and so on. As part of the process of exploring that and the requirements for that, I developed some ideas about a data platform and what kind of data platform is needed in the next generation of computing going forward. So before joining the Open Group, I actually had a background in software development. My first job, I remember, they gave me a little breadboard and said, "This is a wonderful thing. It's got the 8080 on it. It's so much better than the 8008. And that was actually the first true 8-bit computer. Didn't have hardware multiply, but it was pretty good. So they said, "Go and program that." And so that was my sort of start in programming. And I've done a lot of software development over the years. So I started to develop a data platform. And that is what I am in the business of bringing to market in due course. So that's I guess the background to why I'm doing what I'm doing now.
Nice, thank you. And another quick one. So in terms of the Open Group standards, how have you perceived them over time?
So I've perceived them as important standards. I think the Open Group does an important job not only in producing the written standards, but in maintaining the communities that use those standards and that have a shared understanding of the meaning. So the words are fine, but words are always subject to interpretation. And it's the fact that we have in the open group forums who are discussing these standards and then certification programs arising from that to check that people understand them and are able to bring them into use properly. I think that's a key role that the open group plays. And I've been involved, in fact, I was involved originally in the ex-open company, which was strong on the Unix standard, which obviously is a foundation standard for computing. And more latterly, because I was there while the TOGAF standard was being developed. So I've got a feeling for the importance of that standard, and I've seen the growth of its use and the way that the Open Group has fostered the enterprise architecture community around that standard. Now that's my perspective on Open Group standards, if you like. And of course now it's going into a wider range, things like the OSDU, and of course the Open Footprint Forum is very important in today's world.
Nice, thank you. And how important would you say accessibility is to you?
So you mean accessibility in the sense of disadvantaged people being able to access resources and things?
Yes.
It's not a major consideration for me. Obviously, as I get older, it's going to become a personally more important thing to worry about. But I can see that it is an important consideration given the community of people that use information technology. Obviously it's important. IT is so much a part of our life these days, it's important that everybody should be able to use it. And that means obviously accessibility.
I guess obviously you've been in IT for most of your career now, and as you mentioned earlier, you've seen the start of the TOGAF standard to what is now the TOGAF standard 10th edition, which has been quite a journey. But I guess, have you seen much of a change in the way IT operates in your time in the field?
Well, there has been a huge change. I mean, the initial, I mean, going right back, Unix was a huge thing, because when I first came into IT, everybody wrote programs for the particular computer that they happened to have at the time, and none of them would work on anything else. There was always, I remember the hardware people, there was a big division in those days between hardware and software engineers, and the hardware engineers were always saying how software engineering lacked productivity. They were able to buy standard components, have systems that could be created productively, whereas none of the software was standard in any way, and it meant that there was no productivity in software engineering, and that was a true criticism. And over the years that has changed. So as I say, Unix was an important step in that it allowed the development of standard applications to run on multiple computers. And we've seen the productivity angle of things becoming even further developed with the growth of agile computing and DevOps. Sorry, I should say agile architecture and DevOps. So we're now able in the software engineering side of things to turn out new applications rapidly, to go through a cycle of development and test very rapidly so that mistakes can be corrected quickly and new products can be delivered quickly. So the productivity gap is no longer there. And also the move to the cloud has made a big difference. As a cloud platform for all this thing, these things, not only can we develop software more quickly and more effectively and more cheaply because the cloud gives us shared development resources, we can also distribute it more effectively. You know, you don't have to go to a shop to buy it anymore. You click a button on your browser and download it, and there you are. So, yeah, there have been huge changes.
I think you've just touched on something as well recently with obviously the pandemic that we've had, and COVID has had to almost force companies, organizations to have, you know, speed up their digital transformations. And that's maybe been something that's helped us out in the long run with getting technology available to most people in a more efficient manner.
Well, it has made a difference. And I think all of us in the IT industry can be proud of the fact that when these things were needed because of the pandemic, things like remote meetings, email communications, ordering products online and so on, when these things were needed, they were there. They were, the IT community was able to deliver what society needed to get through that crisis. And yes, the fact that IT was able to deliver this meant that people became more used to using IT, and it's become more embedded in the fabric of everyday life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you, Chris, for taking us on your journey so far. And we'd now like to pivot into a short Q&A. So to start off with, what advice can you give to those who are looking to work in your sector, please?
Well, I think it's been an exciting sector to be in ever since I joined it all those years ago, and it still is. So I think perhaps the advice I would give people is the same thought that I had when I first started, which is that the information the technical content of what you're doing will probably turn over by nearly 100% every 5 years. So get used to the fact, and I think that is still going to happen into the near future at least. Get used to that. Be ready for things to change under your feet.
Nice. And personally, how do you keep on growing and learning as you go along? And do you have any advice in that area as well?
So participating in forums such as the Open Group provides, but obviously the Open Group is not the only source of these things. That's a great way to make sure that you keep in touch with what other people are thinking. The internet, the web makes it easy. You just go online and you can click things and a whole load of stuff comes up in front of you. But you also need to have the interaction with people to, you know, keep yourself in sync with what everybody is thinking.
Mm-hmm. And would you also say on that note, learning from others is quite a big thing in terms of, you know, improving and growing and evolving as well?
I would, yes. I mean, we all learn from others. Yeah. There is a limit to how much you can do on your own. You very quickly come up against that. So, yes, absolutely.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's very relevant as a former forum director of the Open Group, of being able to interact and work with other people within the forum. It definitely helps. But on the note of the Open Group and forums and standards, can you explain which standards you have completed, or maybe how long ago you did? And after completing the certifications, what was the first thing you thought of?
Which standards the groups I was supporting developed?
Yes, yeah. We'll start with.
Because, the XNET, the XNET standards, the that was basically a networking interface to Unix, which incorporated not only TCP/IP, but in those days we were talking very much in terms of the ISO OSI Transport Class 4. So those standards. I was instrumental in getting IPv6 incorporated into that. So I also was heavily involved in directory interoperability. We, in fact, didn't produce the LDAP standards. Those were produced by the IETF. But what the Open Group did do was to produce a certification program to certify conformance of products to the LDAP standards. So I was heavily involved in that. I don't know how far you would call these as standards. We did a lot of work in the cloud computing area, produced the book Cloud Computing for Business. We did produce a number of standards associated with that. There was a reference model, and there were also white papers on how to use cloud computing. So in fact, thinking about it, I've probably spent less time in the Open Group developing standards or supporting the development of standards, and more time supporting the development of things in the standards ecosystem, the supporting guides and white papers and certification. I don't know if that answers the question that you were hoping I would answer.
No, that was perfect. Thank you. So if I can go back a little bit to Lakerbus, and obviously what we've mentioned here that you developed Lakerbus with the ideas, you formed the company to provide services based on virtual data lakes and data-centered architecture. But just for someone who may not know too much information about that, but could you explain a little bit more about virtual data lakes?
Okay, so the idea of a virtual data lake is that you can connect to multiple sources of data and synchronize with them, so that as the data in those sources changes, the data that you access through the virtual data lake changes. You don't actually copy all the data into the virtual data lake. You keep summaries of it, which enable you to search for the data that you need. And you have a layer of access control, which means that the people who own the data in the sources can control what the users who are using it through the virtual data lake can see and can change. That's the basic concept of the virtual data lake. So as with any platform or generic product, it's something which, if you're going to put it into the market, you know, what everybody will ask is, what are the applications? And I've spent time on putting sort of applications around it. One application is a data content management system, which supports a number of live websites. It allows you to update and display the data in the sources that the data lake is connected to, and put them on web pages. And I'm now getting heavily into natural language processing, which I think is going to be an ideal application for this particular style of platform, because it's you need, in order to do the natural language processing, you create fairly large pieces of intermediate data, you might say, and the ability to search through them without sort of downloading them all is important, and it's also proving to be quite good on the performance side of things in being able to do the data access quite quickly, even with those large pieces of data. So that's where I am currently, because I participate now as a member in Open Group activities. So we have the data integration work group, which is looking at how to do data integration using the Open Group standards, and on its roadmap is the researching of various topics. So what I'm experimenting with is the use of natural language processing to extract topic information from web documents to speed that research up. Because during the course of my time as a forum director and in other roles, I've actually written quite a large number of documents, and the doing that has required researching into what everybody else says on the topic on the web, and you generally find that there's a huge mass of it, and the problem you have is, because you've always got a deadline of some kind, how do I make sense of all this stuff fairly quickly? And that's what I think the natural language processing is going to help with. Also, I think it will help in a group context for members of the group to be able to work in collaboration on this research by sort of inputting their ideas. Well, I think this is important, or I think that is important. And that will help filter the sort of summaries and extractions that come from the document base. So that's where I am at the moment. And what I am planning to do is to, because the virtual data lake implementation is open source, to offer services in creating solutions to do things like the natural language processing research or other things that use the virtual data lakes to companies that need those things doing.
Just to touch on quickly when you were speaking about work groups, what do you most look forward to when it comes to work groups?
Golly, well, I guess the discussion is the discussion. I mean, sometimes those discussions can be quite pointed, and sometimes you come out of them feeling quite bruised. But nevertheless, they are the you know, even though you come out quite bruised, it's still something to look forward to.
Thank you. And just to slowly change course to a few ending icebreaker questions. So the first one is, if you could have dinner with three famous people, who would they be and why? This is one of my personal favorites.
Golly, so that is a good question.
And it can be, sorry, past and present famous people, past or present.
All right, well, that makes it easier. Okay, well, I'll start with Tim Berners-Lee, because I'd like to discuss virtual data lakes with him. So who would I like to discuss with after that? I mean, he has been, sorry, I've sort of got a little mental block with thinking of other people, because he has, in my view, been the sort of key figure who has influenced things over the course of my lifetime. So if we go back into the past, I'd quite like to talk with George Bernard Shaw, who is I mean, he was a very, he was a playwright and an author, and he had a very high opinion of himself. He put himself on the same kind of level as Shakespeare, and sort of felt in over the course of time, people would mention him in the same context and perhaps more often. And that hasn't been the case up till now. But I think it would be an interesting discussion with him on that. Then, all right, the last person is somebody I actually have talked to. Okay. Professor Gilbert Murray, who you may not have heard of. He was actually very strong in the League of Nations. He was one of the key proponents of the League of Nations. And I guess inspiring the United Nations. He was accused of being a pacifist during the 39-45 war, and he maintained he wasn't a pacifist. The war was necessary, though he hated wars, but he was proud of the fact that although the League of Nations had signally failed to prevent that war, there were still their working groups with people from different countries working on topics which are now discussed in the United Nations. These were important ways of bringing countries together. We actually, until I was two, we lived next door to him. So I'm told, though I do not remember this, that I have spoken to him in the past, and I'd like, if possible, to catch up after all these years.
Nice. And going on to another question, can you describe your dream team?
Are you thinking of a sport here, or are you thinking of a team of a marketing guru, a development guru, that kind of team?
Let's go with sport. Let's go with sport.
It's the World Cup after all.
It is the World Cup. I don't know. I don't think I can describe the whole team. I'm hesitating of whether I would include Cristiano Ronaldo in it or not. Obviously, he's a major force, but can screw things up for the rest of the team. Yes, I'd probably. Probably what I would do if I was a football manager, I would be watching the World Cup with great interest, and I would be picking my dream team from the countries playing, ideally selecting players in some of the lesser known countries who you might pick up on the cheap, but who are showing to be good. That's how I would create my dream team, if you like.
Nice, thank you.
So I guess similarly on the topic of that, are there any, sports or activities that you used to do or do now that are maybe considered quirky in any way or not the norm?
Quirky.
Or in general, how do you try and pass your time? Your free time?
How do I pass my free time? I've lately acquired a drone, which is good fun, but I don't think that could count as quirky.
I absolutely think it can.
I thought everyone was doing it now, but I'm getting into I bought it ideally for my grandson to play with, but I've sort of got into to using it. It takes great pictures. One of the things sort of a little hobby is photography. And one of the things you struggle for when photographing things is, how do I get above it? You know, you get people standing on their cars to take pictures of events and so on. But you don't have that problem with a drone. It just goes up and you get your shots. So that's fun.
Yeah, drone photography is really amazing right now, and you see all these people that can fly the drones, you know, under bridges, through trees, and they get all these great, you know, panoramic shots and things. Are you learning how to do that, or?
Well, that's a bit of a sore point because the drone had to go for some rather expensive repairs after hitting a tree. But I'm really just getting started into it. But even with a low level of drone flying skill, which is all I have at the moment, you can still take impressive pictures. And obviously, as you say, as you get a higher skill level and get to fly between trees and past buildings and things, you're going to get some fantastic pictures.
Yeah, I would love to see some of yours one day. Next time we see you, maybe in London, if we get a chance to see each other.
Sure. Yeah, I can show you. But it does give you a different viewpoint from a photography angle. It's also, it's also something you have to. It's a sort of community, and it's a growing thing, so you have to fit in with what other people are doing. Although I live way out in the country, I find when I take off, because there's an app that you use to control the thing, and this communicates with a database of what the attributes are of where you're flying and so on. So Lincolnshire is heavily used by the RAF for practice. So I turn the app on and it comes up and says you can't fly more than 150 feet high, which presumably is because otherwise it might get hit by a flying fighter. I have to say, I don't think they stick to, if they have 150 feet height limit, I don't think they stick to it. So the risk is probably still there. But, it's sort of something that you have to be aware of. And obviously, as people are getting into doing these things in cities with the ideas of drone deliveries and drone taxis, I think it's going to be an important IT application, in fact, of drone traffic control. I remember one of the companies I worked with right in the early days was, in fact, doing air traffic control systems. One of the people working on this confided to me that actually it would schedule a crash once in every, I don't know, 2 to the 56 times or something. So it's and obviously that's developed a lot since then. So you now do have the ability to manage flights in real time much better, but that's going to have to step up an order of magnitude in sophistication if it's going to cope with lots of companies delivering food using drones in big cities. It'll be a fascinating area to work in.
Yeah, it reminds me of smart cities, very, very, you know, thinking more in the future. And if we're having drones flying around, maybe there's some integration that needs to be done there with the rest of the infrastructure.
Yeah, so the smart cities will come into this. I didn't mention that part of the work we did in the Open Platform 3.0 forum in the Open Group was related to smart cities. And one of the standards, in fact, that the Open Group produced was related to the Internet of Things. So that was a sort of fairly low-level interface standard. It's a huge area, and maybe virtual data lakes will be an important part of making it all work.
Yes, only time will tell. Now hopefully we get to see that in the near future.
Yeah, well I did actually at an Open Group conference I did do a demonstration of a virtual data lake running on a Raspberry Pi and feeding in data from a sensor and then combining that with other data that was input by text from a. So that is the kind of thing it can do, and it's the kind of data integration that is going to be needed as we move into things like managing drones flying around together in a close environment, and with I mean things like air pressure and temperature sensing is going to be probably an important part of the applications that deal with that. So as I said earlier, anybody entering the industry, they should look to see the information content of what they do turn over in 5 years' time. It'll still happen.
Thank you. Now, before we wrap things up, we just want to do a quick fire round. So I'm going to start off with saying a few choices, and the aim of the game is to just pick which choice you'd like to go with. Okay, so first one is tea or coffee?
Coffee. But it's got to be good coffee.
Holiday abroad or holiday locally?
For personal circumstances, it has to be locally, but I do like to travel abroad.
Okay. Teleportation or flying?
Oh.
Quite a hard one.
Well, no, I'm thinking back to my early days when I worked for ITT, which was where I started. And that was not only in the telephone business, it was also in the hotels business. And we had a discussion once and said, oh, teleportation, that'll kill the company. No one will have to stay in hotels anymore and they won't need telephones. So teleportation would be a good thing if we have it.
Nice. Okay. What about taking notes on your smartphone or tablet or pen and paper?
Oh, on the smartphone, using voice input.
Nice. Okay. And last one, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Nice. Thank you. So we'd just like to wrap things up now, but we'd like to extend our thank you for coming on to our podcast and talking to us about what you do and your journey so far. And for many of our listeners out there who may not know much about your topic of interest, is there any links that you can provide or areas where they can find out more about you, if that's okay?
Well, LinkedIn is probably the best starting point.
Perfect.
Just Google for me on LinkedIn, and that's the easiest way.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. It's been interesting to have to search my memory for all these things, and my mind for the ideas. You've asked some searching questions, so thank you for
that.
Thank you.
It's been great having you on. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for your time, Chris. Look forward to speaking to you soon.
Well, pleasure.
Thank you.